So a continuation of reading from the deity worship from Sutta Prabhupada Shikshamrita on the section of deity worship, dressing, bathing, etc. First letter is to Satsu Maharaj, November 14, 1968. The clothing is already painted on Jagannath. Even there is no cloth. Even if Krishna is naked, that does not make any difference. When we dress him, our service is appreciated. From Krishna's side, naked or dressed, he is Krishna. And from our side, if we nicely dress Krishna and nicely feed him, he is appreciating our service. And we are certainly benefited. Just like yesterday, we were the deities were being dressed. And I think one or two of the devotees were being shown how to dress the deities. So it's not that the deities need to be dressed. Or it's not that God in any manifestation needs to be served or demands our service or even demands our worship. Sometimes people say, well, some people say there's no God at all. But then some say that even if there is a God, why should he force people to worship him? And those who don't, then why does he chastise them? And if God is all good and all love, the idea that if you don't ingratiate or flatter him, then he brings all hell down on you. Then some people suggest, well, they don't want to worship such a God. It doesn't seem like love. Or sometimes they go on to speculate on the idea that God cannot be all good, because there are even theologians writing books, how can bad things, happen to good people? And so what they're really saying is such is that somehow God is out of control, because somebody's good and God has let something happen to him, happen to them. And therefore, it is not proper. They have some illness, or they have a child sometimes, someone they love very much, who's brought into this world, perhaps deformed. And they look at that and they think, but this is an innocent kid, and I love this kid, and this kid should have a better chance in the world. But why is it that this child is being put at such a deficit from day one? Well, that helps us to understand so much, obviously, about karma. And it helps us to see how the patterns carry over into different lifetimes. Because, yes, we know that if there is goodness in the world, the Lord must be the supreme of all goodness. And if there is some controlling agent, we know that the idea of the Krishna as Bhagavan means that he is having all the opulences to their greatest extent. So he's controlling. But then why does an all-good God who's controlling allow somebody to be brought into this world in a deformed state? Well, why does he let someone have to experience this kind of problem or that kind of problem? Well, it's not that God is like chastising us. But what happens is our actions, they summon certain kind of connections. Like if you're something to drink. They send out like a call. And then, as the alarm goes off, it draws something. And so, we can, at any moment, understand about our past by the things that's happening to us in the present. Any moment, we can understand some of the results of what we have done in the past by what presently is upon us. Wealth, happiness, distress, sickness, all of these things are summoning the mind, the actions, the thoughts. They send out a call. And then according to the call, then something comes. But sometimes we make calls and we don't realize what we're really sending out. And sometimes because the reactions do not come right away, we think we're calling and nothing is out there. Because karma is in many ways, there is mature and immature karma. Immature karma is something that the call has not yet connected with the particular atmosphere, or the corresponding reactions have not aligned themselves. And mature karma is that the calls have gone out and already The alignments have taken place. And so until we are pure, karma-free, we're all under different aspects of different modes of material nature. And they're constantly unfolding, they're constantly adding on, and also some cleansing goes on. Unfortunately, what normally happens is we cleanse somewhat, and then we also bring ourselves back into a contaminated state. And sometimes we get into such a low mode of consciousness that practically no cleansing is going on. We're just packing up and packing up, or taking away more of even previous credits. So therefore, when we do the deity service, it is one of the more powerful ways of allowing the consciousness to become cleansed. Because normally, especially the karmis, everything is about their body, their pictures in the house, all the relationship to their wedding, their anniversary, their graduation, their this, their that. And so it puts so much consciousness just on the body growing old and the experiences the body is having as it is struggling. And the past times of the talk is all about different adventures in material nature. And so they do not hear, the past times of the Lord. They do not have a chance to understand more about the difference between matter and spirit. And so those kind of conversations, that kind of environment, it draws more of the same. But then sometimes we even have a spiritual environment, but at the same time, much of what comes out of our mind, out of our consciousness, is actually material. Not anti-material, but material. So therefore, we will have a physical spiritual environment, but gradually, because the internal situation is not growing sufficiently, then gradually what is internal begins to manifest externally. And as the internal manifests externally, then sometimes we're not happy about what the results of that is. And therefore such people are likely to say, how does bad things happen to good people? Because their external environment is all pious. They're Christian, they're Muslim. They make their prayers. They make their salat. Maybe they even chant their mantras. But if the internal state is not comparable, then what happens in time, then the internal begins to manifest more externally, and then we find more and more disturbance in the ability to be able to think of the Lord and to serve the Lord. So because so much noise is in the mind that later makes so much or aligns itself with so much unfortunate karma, then such things as deity service are very helpful in reminding us about putting the Lord as a center, and especially as recommended for householders, because there's even more opportunity or chance to begin to put so many of the day-to-day material demands as a priority, and then to gradually work God into the picture, and to the point that there's practically no God involvement except Sunday to Sunday, Saturday to Saturday, and then it gets to the point that people just go to the church on Easter or Christmas, or they go to the temple on Janmashtami or Ram Navami. And so it's almost like they feel a sense of guilt. They're not really accepting the God aspect, but they're considering that if there is a God, at least let me make sure that I'm kind of covered. So I want to make sure I'm covered, therefore I'll do something so that if there is a God, it won't be so heavy, because in the long run, he'll see that I flattered him a little bit. Because I flattered him some, then whatever he gives out that may be good, then he should make sure, you know, that I get my share. So this is like gambling, considering that really there's no God. But maybe there is. And if there is, I want to see that he gives me something. Because after all, he's the one who put me in this situation anyway. But we, by the resultant, always remember, sometimes we wonder, what is this karma stuff? You say every action produces a corresponding reaction. Bhagavad Gita says, Yayatamam prapajante tamshadevabhajam mamamanu patate manusha patasavasya. That as one surrenders, God rewards accordingly. Bible says you reap what you sow. So what is that? Because we all see that something is happening to us that we don't want. Always. Well, the Lord is responding to the resultant. Everything we do, it adds up to something. And what it adds up to, that's what the universe is responding to. So, just like, for instance, you use your credit card, and you buy so many things. Things you want, and you buy them. So you have used your credit card to buy what you wanted. Now at the end of the month, or however it works, at the end of the month, then there's a bill for you. Huh? And you say, but I don't want this. But you do want it. You wanted the things that you paid for, and now the results of what you paid for is what your bill is. So you didn't actually want the bill, and you know it's going to be that high. You weren't thinking so much, thinking out what all of those purchases were going to add up to. You wasn't thinking about what all those actions and all those thoughts were going to add up to. But you were thinking it, or you were doing it, or you were buying it. And so now that you have bought this and bought that and bought that, and then you're thinking, oh my God, I can't pay, how am I going to pay for all of this? This must be somebody else's bill. They must have made a mistake. God must have made a mistake. I didn't ask for this. I only bought this and did this and did this. But you didn't see what it was adding up to. Some people do not keep good account. They even write bad checks, huh? Because they don't keep such good records. They put something in, and then they spend so fast, they forget about what they're spending. Then they start writing some check, and there's no money in the bank. So sometimes, we have even made many deposits by all kinds of spiritual activities, but we don't realize how big we draw off by certain things that we do. And we can make big, big withdrawals. But then we think, well, but you tell the bank teller, but I deposited 5 times last month. And I only withdraw twice. But when you withdraw, you draw big. And therefore, you only have $5 left in the bank. So, spiritual life is something analogous to this. The Buddhists have a very good understanding of the idea of credits. How various types of spiritual things that you do acquire you certain types of credits. And this is called, in the Vedic cosmology, is understood, Krishna consciousness is understood as Sukriti and Ajnana Sukriti. Ajnana Sukriti is when you are doing some things and you're not aware of the results, but they're good things and you're acquiring credits and you're building up. And Sukriti is the things that you're consciously doing that's adding up day to day, or sometimes from lifetime to lifetime. So a certain level of Sukriti brings you in association with devotional people. A higher level of Sukriti allows you to practice devotional activities. And as your Sukriti or as your credits build up, then they draw you to a higher and higher level of association, higher and higher level of realization, and greater, more personal experiences with the Godhead. So, just like sometimes someone is not even aware that they're doing something that is involving themselves in being able to help the glorification of the Lord or help with the Sankirtan activities. But by doing it, then they get blessed. And then different things happen in their life. It's like there's different signs of good karma from a carryover from a previous life. And sometimes it manifests in terms of good education, beautiful bodily features. It manifests in terms of taking birth in a spiritual family. And there are also distinct signs of karma that's carried over now from a previous life that's due to impious activities. And it's almost the opposite. Bad health, poor education, poverty. So even someone who is born with wealth, that is a good connection initially, because if you're so poor, basically all you have time to think about is what to do to get something to eat. And it becomes a big distraction. It's just now some of us have seen due to economic problems, that is a problem sometimes. You want to do more service. You want more time to focus on just your direct devotion. But then the demands of materialism are so great, the demands of trying to arrange something for your financial situation is so great that sometimes it has a way to even interfere. So there's a big problem now of how to balance the material and the spiritual. We must always keep the spiritual as a priority, because then Krishna will make the other arrangements. But now, what happens with the Sukriti is that when the credits build up and build up, then it comes to a point where you can know God from an impersonal level. As they build up more and more, then you can know God in a personal aspect. And as they build up more and more, you can even associate with the Lord in the spiritual kingdom. So this is all a matter of karma. It's really a matter of what we do, what we say, how we act, and what the resultant of those actions add up to. So when we worship the deity, we keep the deity in our house, or some pictures, we have some altar, as a way to, one, to make the house spiritualized, and two, to always remind us that our home is the temple for the Lord. And in that sense, we try to do things in our home in such a way that it is something that will enhance the conscience of anybody who comes into our home. As much as we can control our environment, we try to see that nobody comes in our house smoking. Nobody drinks in our house. Nobody eats meat if possible, if you have your own place. Then you regulate, obviously, what goes on. So that you give any visitors, they walk right into a higher energy field. And therefore, you get less drain also by being in an environment that puts out so much negative energy in the environment that it acts as a way to procrastinate your actual progress. So you're constantly chanting and reading and hearing. And every chance you get, talking about the Lord. Because what you talk about is a mantra that's vibrating throughout your consciousness. So if you're talking about Tanpa Japa or, you know, gossip, that's vibrating. If you're a kind of person who's always looking for the fault, you're looking hard to find where's the fault, then that's all in your mind. It means your mind is just accumulating more and more faults that may or may not be there, but that's what you're accumulating. Or if you're the type of person who's always doubtful or thinking that somebody is trying to talk about you or somebody is looking at you wrong, then you get all this negative stuff. Even if somebody is looking at you funny. But for you to have to deal with all of that and make it a mantra, then you just allow yourself to be accumulating more and more debits. Because now that's what you're sending out. And you're going to align yourself with more of that. So it's simple. What you put most of your energy into is what you get. If we don't like what's happening in our life, we have to see how to refine the energy. It's all about energy conversion. We have to look closer and see how much debits are there in contrast to the credits. This is why in our, particularly our handbooks like Nectar Devotion, which all devotees should be reading over many times, it is so much based on the rules and regulations of how to execute devotional service, what things to do in the 64 process of devotional service, and also what things to avoid. And so there's just as long a list about things to do as well as the things to avoid that are offenses. And then what happens is that, as we often mention regularly, that offenses of different natures, we have what? Seva aparad, that is offense you can make in deity service. Offenses you do in the idea of executing services. And then we have dham aparad, which is offenses people make when they go to the holy pilgrimage places. Last week we were discussing how holy pilgrimage places are surcharged with pastimes of the Lord, pastimes of prophets. Surcharged with people coming for mercy and great sadhus or saints coming to give their love, and therefore the atmosphere becomes more dynamic. So whatever happens, the results come faster. You go to Vrindavan, you go to Rishikesh, you go to Varshana, you go to the Himalayas, you go to Jagannath Puri, you go to Jerusalem, Mecca, all these places, because they are places where very powerful saints and representatives of God have in fact interacted in their expressions of love of God. Just some time back, a plane from Nigeria went to Mecca, and they carried so many pilgrims. And the plane crashed on the way back. Everybody died. Very inauspicious. They didn't find out so many people were going to Mecca to make drug connections. People were going and then, hiding and, not going back to their country. People were going just to do business. And then, if you know, some years back, in these pilgrimage places, so much war is going on. In Ayodhya, so much war is going on. The Muslims and the Hindus in India. Practically all over now, these sacred pilgrimage places. In Israel, Jerusalem area, so much war is going on. Which is showing how much people are minimizing what the prophets have really done and the atmospheres. And little they realize the heavy, heavy reaction. That's even greater than in other environments because they're doing something in these places that are highly spiritualized. So the consequences are tremendous. Even in places like in Vrindavan now, prostitution is going on, organized crime is going on, murders are going on. No place in the world now where these kind of sins are not taking place. However, in such holy dhams, the results are at least 10 times magnified. So what we do, and sometimes 100 times, what we do, devotional, then it's greater. The results come faster and more powerful. And what we do that's sinful, the results come faster and also more powerful. And that's why sometimes we were discussing how we go on to some of these sacred pilgrimages. Some people, they come back very ill. Or they have an amazing financial crisis. Something happens immediately, sometimes a few days after returning. Because of the reactions of improper activity and thoughts. And that's why also in these holy dhams, sometimes we see in the Shastra, it recommends visit these places only for a few days so that you do not begin to take things for granted. So that one will move on and such. So that is dhamma aparad. And then there's what is called, we have shave aparad in service, dhamma aparad, the holy pilgrimage places. And then, of course, as you just chanted the 10 offenses, there's nam aparad. Offenses that are made in the process of calling on the name of God. Why not? Everything that has some potency is potent because of doing it the right way. And because something is powerful, if you do it the wrong way, then you don't get the results. Or sometimes, like with electricity, you handle it improperly and you actually get electrocuted. The Prabhupada explains that spiritual life is like a razor's edge. That you can get a good shave or you can also cut yourself because the razor is sharp. And then, after the dhamma aparad, because the 10 offenses you mentioned, those should be constantly remembered so that we know how to chant in a way that we will get the effective potency. You know some of those offenses. To consider the name, to consider the demigods the same, the name of Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu to be the same as Krishna, to disobey the orders of Guru, to blaspheme the Vedic scriptures, preach to the faithless. All of these affect the actual culture of devotion, which affects the chanting. Which means that even though you think you're depositing, you're not depositing. Like you go to the bank and you think you're depositing, you deposit a check in, but it was a bad check. So you may be doing some devotional practices. You think you're depositing, but if those offenses are being made, you're just going through the motions. You wrote the check, you went to the bank, and you put it in. And at the end of the month, you look at your statement, and you don't have any money in the bank. Or you've withdrawn more than you thought. Because some of the checks you put in, they didn't go through. This is what all the offenses do. They affect all the things that we try to connect with. And some offenses are so heavy, they not only our bad check, but then it even takes out even something that you have. Next offense is Vaishnava aparad. Vaishnava aparad are offenses performed in the execution of saints interacting amongst themselves. Anyone who is trying to dedicate their life is one of the offenses in chanting the holy name. One who's dedicated their life in trying to preach the glory to the Lord, doesn't matter whether they're beautiful, ugly, fat, skinny, tall, this, that, that. That there's something special because that person is dedicating their particular life. And if in such environments, if people are not careful how they interact, then they also, they lose credits. Or they start depositing checks that are not having any sense of worth. And then there is what's called the met elephant offense. It's called guru aparad. And guru aparad is one of those that not only you deposit and it's a bad check, but it like wipes away so much of good checks that you had put in earlier. And it warns us very seriously in the scriptures to be very careful by such. Because just as the idea of bona fide gurus, different types of gurus, some personalities who do not represent any kind of system, and so they're not based on any kind of heritage or backupness. But the idea of guruship is a door to a system. And so the system, if the spiritual director is proper, then it's a door that gives us a chance to enter in and enter out of a system. And so therefore, if we're not attentive and proper with that system, then that whole system gives us a certain type of reaction. And because of that, we must be very attentive to how we function based on that. Because it's not a personality thing, it is a system. Ultimately inaugurated and passed down. Just like in the African system, we have the kingships and the chiefships and whatnot. And sometimes they come down from generation after generation. The king always appears in a certain family, appears in a certain situation. And after he dies, another one comes. It comes line after line after line. And that's just material. Sometimes you find that in the systems of nobility, in terms of the duke or the earl, they appear in a certain line. So that line then, it becomes a significant thing, not only because of the personality, but because of the actual line itself. And therefore, in the scripture, we have what is the parampara system. Evam parampara praptam imam rajasa yogaru. Sakalena mahatma yoga nashta parantapra. So this message, Krishna says, is passed down through such parampara connections. So what happens then is that when such aparads are made, then we lose the check we thought we deposit and other credits that we put in the bank. We find that they were wiped away. And then we enter into something like bankruptcy, because now we made so many commitments, we don't have the credits or the funds to cover it. And then our whole life gets so complicated and complex. It's like everything just seems to, the bottom of everything just seems to fall apart. Meaning that our resources have actually been depleted. So when we do these things, deity worship, or various types of services, or we're chanting our rounds, we must be careful of visiting the holy dhams, as we're associating with other saintly personalities. We must see and we always remind ourselves that it's a science. And just as in material situation, every action is producing something, we must realize even more spiritual, it is more exact and more to the point. If we think it's not exact, then we don't believe that God exists. Or we think that God is unfair. And if God is love, and we find ourselves depleted in various ways, it's not that God wants us to be depleted. It's the opposite. It's just that our activities have in fact drawn the bad checks. So those of you who are learning how to do the deity service, be very careful with deity service and all other services. I just turn this off for a second. So that as you do the services, you are depositing. That you're not doing a service that's going to cause you to give in the bank a bad check and even take away some of the things that you have. As you associate with Vaishnavas, those you agree with or disagree with, be careful how you speak about any Vaishnava. No serious devotee engages in speaking bad about any Vaishnava. If somebody does something wrong, you speak scripture. You present that and let that speak for itself. You get into personality conflicts and personality trips, you are depleting your devotion inevitably. Because souls that have dedicated themselves, that they have some kind of karma, positive karma that has aligned them with such transcendental teachings, And so those of you who get so much into the fault-finding and the criticizing, first, you may not even be seeing things as they are. And even if you are, there are ways of handling such problems. Because you can be right and still be wrong. You understand that? You can be right in terms of something, maybe a discrepancy, but you may be wrong about how you handle it, and you still pay a price. So therefore, the more we realize the science that's involved, then we are able to cover ourselves, because if we have the devotional conscience, we're always covered. If you're treating everyone as Prabhu, we call each other Prabhu, means master. We're treating everyone as Prabhu, we're treating everyone as like an energy of the Lord, trying to always speak about Krishna, trying to always have a humble position, glorify the Lord, see how to serve, whether it's a senior devotee, a junior devotee, or whether it's this kind of devotee, that kind of, it doesn't matter. As you do like that, then you're always covered. As you start making some distinction, who is senior and who is junior, and who is this right and who is that right, you're entering into a whole realm of confusion. Because many things in the higher spiritual connections do not always appear, are not always as they appear. If you were existing right now and Jesus was on the planet, who most people would wonder, who is this shepherd guy talking this, you know, this revolutionary stuff? Prophet Muhammad was illiterate. He was an orphan. So materially speaking, he didn't seem to have the qualities of some great spiritual scholar. The Python man was just lying across the road. He didn't have any symptoms of what you would consider saintly, unless you had saintly vision to know what constitutes a saint, unless you had higher vision. Therefore, we start categorizing things based on our perception, and if it's wrong, we're in great trouble. The more spiritualized the situation is, the more debits are taken away from you. That is the natural laws. The more something is hot, the closer you touch it, the closer you come to it, the more you feel the heat. The more something is spiritual, the closer you associate properly, the more devotion comes out of you. The more you associate it with improperly, the more the apparatus is there. The more powerful the holy dham is, the more the offense is there. If you do something improper. The more that you tune into the holy dham, the more spiritualized it is, the more results begin to manifest in your consciousness and for the rest of your life. So be intelligent about reading the scriptures and understanding what's actually in the scriptures that we read every single day. Every day we chant about the offenses to be avoided. Every day we have an understanding that you should do like this and don't do like that. Most of you have all committed yourselves for many years to certain principles. When you took initiation, you committed yourself to certain principles. You made a contract. Even in the material world, if you make a contract, you break the contract, there's consequence. Even materially, there's consequence. The more dynamic something is, the more the consequences are. The more you enter into a contract, and it's a powerful connection, the more you're held responsible, the more fine line stuff is there, the more both parties are held responsible for doing the things that they committed themselves to. So you make a contract, and then you decide to renege that, or you go against that, or you break it, then as you break it, it means it's broken. There's certain consequences that come. If you make a spiritual contract and you break it, it means you're not backed up. It means you're not sheltered. And if you're not sheltered, then you also go along and do things that didn't take away from your devotion. You're just depleting so fast. And nothing is going in. Everything is coming out. Sometimes a person loses their job, right? And they had a little money in the bank, and now everything is just going out. They got to spend for this, spend for that. But nothing is going in. And after one while, even though they may have saved for 2, 3, 4 years their life savings. But now they have no job, and so fast everything is going. So we can understand that materially, why can't we understand it spiritually? The spiritual situation is more dynamic, more a categorical, you know, rule of law. What it means is that we don't understand the philosophy ourselves. Sometimes we don't understand it, and then we're so fast to try to categorize what is the philosophy. We don't understand it ourselves. First, we better understand the philosophy and have a greater sense of what Krishna consciousness means and the potency of Krishna consciousness. If we understand that potency works for us. And as it doesn't, then it works against us as a way to work for us. Just the other day we explained that when you get sometimes a fever or some pain, it's a way to show you there's something wrong with the body. So, in general, our devotional body or devotional consciousness, that when the aparads affecting us, then there's certain symptoms that show us that there is something wrong in the system. Last night, yesterday, we were explaining that no devotee should be feeling morbid, depressed, unenthused. To the degree that you are unenthused, that is maya. Rupa Goswami explains that in the process of executing devotional service, the very first thing he emphasizes is enthusiasm, firm conviction. Enthusiasm is so important because if we're not enthused about the devotional activity, then what happens is that we inevitably look for alternatives for sense gratification to make ourselves enthused. And a sign that we're engaged in aparads, one of the most definite signs, is that we lose our enthusiasm. We lose the desire to see the deity. We lose the desire to chant. We lose the desire to associate. We lose the desire to engage in the basic tenets that we made our pledge to in terms of when we took initiations. We lose our desire. We try to start reading the scriptures, and we just fall asleep because we have no desire. Reading the scriptures should constantly be an experience of excitement. It doesn't matter whether you've been a devotee for 1 year, 10 years, or 20 years. When you start finding yourself reading and you no longer have attentiveness and enthusiasm to read, it means you are entering into some heavy weeds. Because that's material when there is stagnation. Even maintenance is stagnation. Spiritual life is not about just maintaining. In your own life and whatever community you are from, associated with, if you're doing something spiritual and it's maintenance, that is a lack of spiritual potency. Spiritual potency means constant chance to glorify the Lord more, to serve the Lord more, and the more that you are serving the Lord, the more that love, devotion, attracts devotion. But when you engage in the Dhamma aparads, Nam aparads, Shaiva aparads, Vaishnava aparads, Guru aparads, then everything starts getting spaced out, watered down, impotent, impersonal. Impersonalism is the dominant connection of bringing us later to atheism. We're basically surrounded by a world of impersonalism, where everybody's doing whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want, without a system of regulation. People eat anything. They drink anything. They relate to anything in terms of the opposite sex, same sex, it doesn't matter. And even sometimes animals. And even incest or child abuse. So these are signs where we minimize autocraticness. Spiritual life is based on the process of receiving mercy from above, coming down. And therefore, the sign that we are growing in our spiritual life means that unlimited mercy begins to happen through our lives. Like Sanatana Goswami is saying, how these things are coming about, how these things are happening. God is not an ordinary administrator. God is not an ordinary personality. Krishna consciousness is not a rational process. It's far above the rational platform. The Lord's mercy is even greater than the law, His law. His laws are emphatic. Especially the law of reciprocity, of every action produces a corresponding reaction. As we surrender, the Lord rewards us accordingly. But actually, the mercy is even greater. Krishna book says that of all Krishna's opulences, his greatest opulence is actually his mercy on the conditioned souls. So if that mercy is not coming through, then we're in some problem, some complication. The wages for devotion is more service. Understand that. When you are serving the Lord properly, one of the signs is you have more service. That is your wages. When you start finding you have no service, you don't know where you're going, what to do, that is like a curse. Because the service is the medicine. It is the prescription. By engaging in the service, that helps you to take the medicine for purification. Now so many people don't have any service. There's never a time when you can't have service. If you want to serve the Lord, if nobody's giving you service, you make service. There's always a chance to serve the Lord. But if you're only thinking of maintenance, you're only going to have more maintenance. It's like somebody comes to your house, if you're Vedic, you have nothing. You give them water, you give them a piece of bread, you give them something. You can always serve. You can always give something. You may not have a lot of food to make a nice, beautiful feast, but you give something. Somebody doesn't have clothes. You may only have one or two saris, one or two dhotis, but you give something, you share. There's never a time when you can't do service, you can't do something. With those who feel they can't do service, it means that's not a priority. We see how much the material world is constantly grabbing us, trying to put us more and more into just I and mine, into this body. We have to be that much more careful to constantly try to access the spiritual. And as we engage in devotional service, we have to see it as a science. And realize that Krishna does not go to sleep. He does not take vacations. He does not have favorites. Samoham sabhabhuteshu. The Lord is equal and kind to everyone. So then why? Why? Someone has this problem, someone has this situation, that situation. All due to the resultant of our karmic activities, of what they add up to. Each day should be a new experience about how we're going to serve the Lord more. The mind is too idle, the conscience is not focused, then to that degree, Maya is just going to pour in. Each day you should be fixed in what you're going to do for Krishna and your guru. At the end of the day, you should be able to look and see, what did I do for my guru? If you can't distinctly see that you've done something other than maintain eating, sleeping, and maiden defending, then you might as well not even have a guru. You might as well not even be engaged in Krishna consciousness. Just be in some religion where you recognize something about the Godhead conception and you do something. You pay some tithe every now and then or you go to some ceremony. But that's not the culture of devotion. The culture of devotion is that you are a devotee first who happens to be an engineer, happens to be a lawyer, happens to be a teacher, happens to be a householder, happens to be a sannyasi, happens to be a brahmachari. Happens to be Brahmachari. You are a devotee who is having some kind of distinction based on the material environment as you're trying to be spiritual in a material environment. So the more that we attune to this science, especially if we look closer to the nature of devotion and understand more about what to do and how to do it and what not to do, then we get less distracted by all of the material details and the material energy and the material bombardments. We begin to go deeper in our consciousness. And we stop withdrawing and withdrawing from our bank accounts. We start putting more and more in. Because those who withdraw and withdraw, even though in past time they may have done so much service, but if they're withdrawing and they're withdrawing, then one day you get your bank statement and you don't have anything in there of any value. And then you feel lost. So don't be the kind of person who has great chance to put in deposits and not constantly adding and adding in the bank account. You do that by each day making your devotional experience something live and vibrant. Each day reading and chanting in the spirit of preparing yourself to go out and do spiritual warfare and not to become a casualty. And constantly living the philosophy. As we're stressing, not making it something conceptual. Or not thinking it's something that used to happen or could happen. Philosophy is always happening. Bhagavad Gita is ever alive. And everybody is engaged in their battle of Kurukshetra. And has to be ready to understand that our greatest, most dominant book is about conflict. Our greatest book is about how one is able to keep focus in bewilderment, in frustration, in anxiety. When all material things seem to come down on you. Our greatest book is dealing with the whole conception of someone who's in a situation where he's got to fight his relatives and teachers. He's got to be in an environment where he's on a battlefield and trying to hear the greatest philosophy while he's in the midst of a battlefield. We should not think that this is just Arjuna's trip, his issue. That we're all engaged in our battle of Kurukshetra. And we have chance to hear and chance to serve and chance to evaluate what is what, then that is an opportunity to glorify Krishna and make the greatest connection. But in those times, then we get too much caught up in just the maintenance of the material, then it means what we do is what you get more of. You'll be running after the same thing. You're never going to have enough money. You're never going to have enough of this, enough of that. Never. Doesn't matter. Because the more you make, the more you're going to spend. So those who keep procrastinating about, well, I'm going to start chanting my rounds, I'm too busy now. Well, there's always going to be things that's going to make you busy. At the same time, you're debiting and debiting. And as you debit, you begin to form certain patterns. And as you form certain patterns, when you try to get out, it becomes more and more difficult to get out. Every action that we do, we form some conditioning to that kind of situation. And we get some of these bad habits as devotees. Sometimes it's very hard to get out of those bad habits. That's why we're discussing how this one of the best musical schools here in America, I think it's honestly Juliet. If you've been already previously trained, in music, when you come to that school, they charge you more. If you haven't had any training, they charge you less. Because they feel that they have to retrain you. And it takes so much more attention and energy to try to retrain you from all these bad habits. If you got so many bad habits, sometimes it's harder to retrain. We have such offensiveness toward Vaishnavas, such much of doubt and fears, and so much mamiti, my this, my that. Instead of living as all the scriptures are emphasizing, that we are attentive of how we associate as sadhus. When you start making offenses, sadhus and sadhus, then the sadhu offense inevitably leads to guru aparad. And guru aparad then leads into doubting Krishna, and doubting the whole system. So we have an environment of so many people who are doubtful, who are doing something for Krishna and something for me. Or such an environment where people are just serving Krishna the idea that maybe if Krishna is really there, let me make sure that I cover myself. It creates impotency. And such environments do not make you enthused about wanting to serve the Lord. In certain that kind of environments don't make you creative about how to keep finding ways to do emergency work on a planet that's dying. You get stagnant and you become dogmatic. Then you lose the ability of taking risk for the Lord. Calculated risk, not foolish risk. Preachers should take risk and constantly find how to save souls. Preachers to involve themselves in thinking that the mind, intelligence, the body belongs to the God. So therefore, they must use it and see that all aspects of their existence is being used in some way, being able to vibrate the fact that Krishna is their well-wisher. And that ultimately, the Lord is monitoring in the heart and is concerned about everyone. So as we live that, then we can share it more and more. And if we can't live it, we can't share it. The sign of Vaishnava is Vaishnava makes other Vaishnavas. A sign of devotion is devotion brings more devotion. A sign of good service is that you get more service. So if we have less service, we're not influencing anybody's heart, even our own hearts. We're spending more and more time worrying about my problem, my this, my this, my this, my that. Then you're just asking for more of that for the future. And you're spending more time in trying to see how, whatever environment you have, whatever facilities you have, how you're using that. The same God who's given you less can give you more if He wants. If He's given you some particular arena, then He's wanting to see how you use that. You don't wait and decide until you get more to do something. Same God has given you that little to see what you're going to do. If you do something with that, then you get more. It always is an increase. If not in quantity, always in quality. And if the quality of service and conscience is not increasing, we were saying Sunday, then it means that some connection is not strong enough. So we have to take inventory and see how much we're understanding the essence of what devotion means. The essence is that we give up sense gratification and connect more with less lust and more love. The essence means is that we don't do what we want, we do what Krishna wants. And Krishna has given certain things that are passed down from generation to generation. There are many things in our lives that are details. Those things can be adjusted carefully according to Desha Kalapatra. There are certain things that are essential that never to be tampered or changed with. We change those essential things when we're dealing with the arteries and the veins of the existence of the spiritual body. Once you start attacking the veins of the spiritual body, then the whole body becomes sick, becomes weak, becomes destroyed. You attack the actual veins of the arteries of devotion. When you engage in those kind of apparats, you're attacking the actual arteries. the actual life force that causes the whole system to function. When you do that, then all kind of manifestations that are improper starts taking place. For those of you who are being trained up in the deity service now, we ask you to be very careful, be very attentive, read as much as you can, know more about what the idea of deity service means, and realize that punctuality and cleanliness are most important, but we should always be in the consciousness that any temple, any project that is at the property of the deity. So sometimes we're more directly serving the deity, and sometimes we're serving more at a distance, but we should always be in the consciousness that everything is for God. Our working with sadhus is to prepare us how to be able to enter into the spiritual kingdom. Our being directed by guru is to help to remind us how to do our work for ultimately for the service of the Lord. It's all about the Lord, all about Krishna. And the more that we are attentive like that, then the more we become Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means always thinking of the Lord. International Society of Krishna Consciousness, not politics, not administration. Those things are details. It's Krishna consciousness. No scripture says you go back to the kingdom of God based on who your guru is, based on what race you are, based on what project you're in, based on what language you speak. None of those things. Based on what kind of administration you have, but based on how you become free of sense gratification and how much you have given your life to what Krishna is dictating as the spiritual rule of law. And that you can't pretend on. You can pretend on a lot of things. We can hide behind position. We can hide behind this. We can hide behind money. We can hide behind administration. We can hide behind projects. We can even hide behind our wife, hide behind our husband, even hide behind our children. But that's only secondary, and it's a temporary thing. Because at some point, what you have is what you have. What you don't have is also what you don't have. And in times of difficulty is when it really shows what you really have. Because in times of difficulties, then, if you really have imbibed something, then it will naturally flow and it will produce good results. And if it doesn't, then it means you have to strengthen those spiritual connections. We stop now. Any questions or comments?
Srila Krishna Prabhupada, I've really been dealing with the issue of the service to the devotees and how we treat one another. And your lecture today was very timely. I remember reading a story of Lord Brahma once made an offense, and two of the greater demigods who lived on his planet, but they were subordinate, they corrected him. And because of that offense, they had to fall down, even though he was apparently incorrect. And Srila Prabhupada brought out the way in which they approached him because he was their superior.
I was giving an example to one of my godbrothers the other day. And I was mentioning about the story of Prithu Maharaj, or something similar. Prithu Maharaj is actually an incarnation of Krishna. And Prithu Maharaj is trying to make the 100th horse sacrifice. And Indra became very disturbed because sometimes the demigods become envious. And so Indra did all kind of things to try to stop Prithu Maharaj's sacrifice. And Indra was actually interfering. And what Prithu Maharaj was doing was actually proper. Then Indra came in disguise as a sannyasi, and he was using his mystic power and doing various things and trying to stop the sacrifice. So, Brahma and later Lord Vishnu approached Prithu Maharaj and told Prithu Maharaj, no, don't make the 100th sacrifice. Because even though you are right, you are causing Indra to do wrong things that's going to cause so much problems for human civilization. Because the sins that Indra will do in trying to stop you is going to cause so much a disturbance to God consciousness. And so I was telling one of my God brothers that there are ways of dealing, because we're addressing about somebody who did something wrong. And the way that they dealt with the person was an overreaction. I said, we better go back to the scriptures and look close. That yes, even when there's a problem, there are ways to handle that problem. Because you can be right and still be wrong. You can be right and have seen something that is improper, but there are ways when it comes to Vaishnava association of how to address and deal with certain issues. I was given this example, and this was Prithu Maharaj, who was not just an ordinary sadhu, or ordinary guru, or ordinary personality. It's actually an incarnation. And he was just doing this, the yajnas. And Indra, who was also a very powerful being, king of the lower demigods. So Indra was envious and was trying to stop the horse sacrifice. And was doing all kinds of things and trying to stop. And then in that canto, the fourth canto, Brahma was telling Indra, Maharaj Prithu, and then Vishnu, that no, it's okay. You don't have to do the 100 sacrifice. And then they gave a long explanation why it's better not, even though you are, you know, worthy of it, even though Indra is wrong, but your actions is going to cause Indra to do more and more types of nonsense. And that's why, for instance, certain aspects of the Krishna conscious society is suffering. Because there's too much involvement where some problems may exist, but then people are not handling those problems in the proper way, and then everybody suffers. And across the board, people begin to experience aparats. Vaishnava association is very, very important about how we address each other, how we serve each other, how we remind each other in terms of how to serve Krishna and how we deal with problems. So people who are administrators, coordinators, temple presidents, sankirtan leaders, whatever service they are, and they're dealing with their dependents, or gurus or GBCs, they're dealing with their dependents, they have to be careful with themselves. But even if they're dealing with somebody who's wrong, there are ways of how to handle a particular problem. Even in the material world, there is excess. As a problem is there, then the law looks at the mitigating circumstances, situations, and then gives some penalty accordingly. In almost all the penalties, there's some range, or some limit, some fine. So you do this, you litter, you may be fined $50 to $500. There is some realm where it's considered okay, and where it becomes actually. So we have to understand more as we read the particular points of devotion, and realize that we are all to be spiritual scientists, and knowing how to serve and how to function, and that we learn how to love all Vaishnavas, not only all Vaishnavas but all spiritualists. Anybody who is about some level of love of God, we don't have to necessarily join it. You don't have to go join this church or join this yoga group or that situation. But if there's some involvement of conscious raising, then we should feel some exhilaration about it. And not be in a kind of a sectarian consciousness or some consciousness where we are intimidated by knowing somebody is doing this kind of yoga or this kind of thing. That may be all they can do in this lifetime. That may be the level that their karma adds up to. Or they may not even be a Krishna bhakta. It's not that every soul in his eternal relationship is a Krishna bhakta. Some souls are Ram bhaktas. Some souls are eternal associates of other aspects of Krishna. So even within the internal Vaishnava line, there are different types, ultimately different types of souls. They have different levels of relationships. And we see, as we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see an example of that. How, let's see, Murari Gupta, that he was actually a bhakta of Lord Ram. Or someone may have a relationship with Lord Shiva. There's some souls that are eternally associates of Lord Shiva. So then, do you try to force, you know, to make them a Vaishnava? No. You share the knowledge and you live it. And you let it shine as it may. Any other questions?
The other point was, I was reading the Srimad Bhagavatam in the seventh canto, and it brought out how deity worship was actually introduced by the great sages in the Treta Yuga, because the people were becoming envious of the devotees, and how the highest worship was actually worship of the devotee, the pure devotee. But because the less advanced devotees were becoming envious of the more advanced devotees, the sages introduced it.
Which Bhagavatam is this, you recall?
Seventh canto.
Seventh canto. Yeah.
And it was very interesting reading. And then it said the deity worship became more prominent in the Dwapara Yuga, and then like that. And my question is, at any point, will deity worship no longer exist? Is that...
Cause well, you know, as Kali Yuga becomes more and more dominant, and we see all the things that Prabhupada explains happens in Kali Yuga, where even people's age, you know, they live to be 21 years old, you're considered old, and how in each yuga, there's such a declining of the number of people who are aspiring for God consciousness. So it comes down to less than 25% in the Kali Yuga. But then later, it gets so bad that even Prabhupada says that people even eat their own babies. And even spiritual people will be hunted down. So we see that even not so long ago, that there were times when the Muslims would attack the temples in Vrindavan. And that was not even a deep part of, you know, of the Kali Yuga. So we can see already that such things are actually possible. Where other religions or sinful people can arrange to, you know, try to destroy the deities, try to destroy temples, mosques, churches, other things like that. So yes, those things will happen where spirituals will have to go underground. There'll come a time, obviously, when sinful life is so dominant that one will have to go underground. But while we have the time now, we try to share as much as possible, because there are some countries where right now we have to go underground. Some of the Muslim countries, it's like some years ago we were going to start a preaching project in Morocco, and we're sending some devotees there. And later we found out that the penalty for converting a Muslim in Morocco is death. And so we had to, take a second turn on that. There's some countries that, you know, that are like that. So the preaching now has to be underground. Well, some years ago in Egypt we had a program, but we just did it, you know, as a restaurant. And then as people come, and we preach to them. Any other question?
Yeah, Your Grace, you said that we should be very careful about making offenses against devotees.
Especially to each other.
Yeah, to each other. Sometimes.
And let me just clarify that. When we say especially to each other, even over deity worship, even over guru, etc. Because if you act proper amongst devotees, you automatically have the proper consciousness about the other things. Somebody who's only attentive to deities, you know, that is, you know, that's a third class devotee. Somebody who's only attentive to guru is nonsense. Because if you are serving guru properly, then you must understand the importance of serving, you know, all Vaishnavas. So the more we are attentive in our day-to-day interactions with each other, then that's what carries over into all of the relationships.
Yeah, it has been times when I criticize a devotee in my mind, and then later I feel, understand the real reason, mm-hmm. and then I say, oh, I'm glad I didn't make an offense or anything like that.
So, well, see, there are mental offenses, verbal offenses, and there are physical offenses. In Kali Yuga, we are not fully held responsible for negative thoughts, although we're somewhat rewarded for positive or pious thoughts, but still there should be danger, because negative thoughts, if we maintain them too long, then they turn into manifested actions, first to verbal offense and then to physical offense. So when we find ourselves thinking negatively, then we have to kind of let alarm go off to try to change the thinking, even though it's not held against us. But if we keep on with that way, then it turns into verbal and then into physical.
But sometimes if we go long enough, see the reason for the offense. I mean, for their action.
Mm.
It's like when I was driving a cab, I remember watching a guy drive wild and crazy. Mm. And I told a passenger, I said, "Well, he's probably rushing someone to the hospital." And then later on, that was the case, you know. It was a reason for his action.
Mm-hmm. This simple technique, even though that's not necessarily offense, that is a, you know, kind of mental gymnastic, but a simple technique of always trying to see the positive side in association is very important. It's a very, very powerful technique. That whatever we see in the environment, we try to help it to remind us, you know, of something devotional. Because then our meditations and our actions become so much more absorbed in higher aspects of service and gets less bogged down, you know, by different types of negativity. And then that negativity doesn't become a mantra for us. So just like if we're in an environment and somebody criticizes us, you know, we take it positive. Somebody glorifies us, we take it positive, we thank the Lord. The more we can get into just a basic consciousness of just thanking Krishna for whatever happens, that will raise our conscience like anything. If we have a little distress come into our life, we thank the Lord for that. And we try to see, well, what does the Lord want me to learn from this? Something good is happening in our life, which we consider good, we thank the Lord. We consider we're not really worthy of this, but we thank the Lord. We try to learn as much from that. And then there's this constant acceleration, if we can keep our minds in such ways. And that's why there's such an emphasis in 12th chapter of Gita, when Krishna is giving the secret, so to speak, to Arjuna about how to become dear to him. He says, one who is unaffected by happiness or distress. One who is not envious. One who does not see himself as a proprietor. You see. One who is not affected by ordinary things. He's given one step after, you know, after another of what is some of the expedient ways of how really to become dear to the Lord. And as we read over this and integrate it into our lives, then our consciousness rises. Any last question? Because these are, you know, these are formulas. These are spiritual formulas. These are keys that open up doors and allow then the, you know, the higher devotion to, you know, to engulf us. As we were saying, when we don't use those keys, and we don't open up the doors, and we start just acting on past credits. Sometimes even the credits from past, you know, past lifetime. Those are going to be depleted in time. Especially when Maya is becoming more accelerated. Not only do you need your past credits, but you need even greater sense of weaponry. Because there's more Maya now, 1993, than there was in 1883. So you have to be even more attentive as you chant your rounds, even more dedicated as you read the scriptures, even more careful how, you know, how you associate. Because the world is becoming more in flux with, you know, impersonalism, you know, and materialism. Okay. Some more questions? Yeah. ISKCON Founder Chada Srila Prabhupada Ki. Gakdaru Srila Prabhupada Ki. Nimai Nitai Ki. Radha Shyama Sundari Ki.